Tuesday, April 14th. Because King Hussein was going to arrive without his wife, I had not expected to participate in the arrival ceremonies at 11:30, so was busily engaged in desk work when I got the word that I'd better be Johnny on the spot, word from Lyndon, that is, for the arrival. The king arrived in a helicopter on the South Lawn at 11:30, short, handsome, infinitely dignified, with a deep, musical, beautiful speaking voice. We escorted him and his young brother, about 18, upstairs in the elevator, and then went out on the north portico, where an army of reporters awaited us on one side and an equal army of photographers on the other. A long line of flags snapped merrily in the April breeze right out in front of the columns. The tulips were just coming out, and Jay had herded all the king's party up the stairs so that they were there and lined up ahead of us. Lyndon took the king out, and I took my position slightly to the left of the door. First, Lyndon made his welcoming remarks, and then the king, and momently I am more impressed by him. And then Lyndon, rather to the surprise of the Secret Service and everybody else, I think, got in the car with King Hussein of Jordan to drive with him to Blair House. From there, Lyndon elected to walk back, became enveloped in a crowd of passersby and sightseers, shook hands, signed autographs, or so the paper said. Meanwhile, I was getting ready to dash over to the Department of Agriculture to open the food and home fair for consumers. Jane and Orville Freeman were out in front waiting for me, and Esther Peterson and Miss John Lesner Lee. I took my stand on a little platform and said my few words based on the very true fact that my life had been spent largely as being a purchasing agent for the family, and so I wanted to get the most and the best for my money, as did every other woman in the United States, because that's very much what women do for a large part of their life. Is manage all the family finances that go into food, clothing, and shelter, and the Department of Agriculture has a close relation to that by serving not only as our safety check, but as a sort of research scientist for us. And then I rang a triangular dinner bell, just like we have on the front porch at the Scharnhorst. Then I got a quick run through at some of the exhibits. An interesting one was an IQ sorter. In front of it passed potatoes, apples, other vegetables, and it can look into the interior of them and detect hidden defects and remove those that should not be on the market as first grade. I suppose they wind up somewhere as food for hogs, perhaps. And saw a specially designed energy-saving kitchen with a swinging stool that's just the right size and height, and everything engineered to save steps. And then I met an enormous Smokey the Bear, a human dressed up in a costume, who gave me a little bear and told me the story of how this originated. Or rather, Orr Freeman, not Smokey himself, told me, in a forest fire, a little bear was so badly burned that it was hardly thought he could live. But he was taken to the veterinarians, carefully tended, he survived, he became the symbol of preservation of our forests. And I told him how he was international now, at least as far as Mexico is concerned, because everywhere I went last July in Mexico along the highways, I would see the familiar Smokey the Bear saying, don't drop matches, extinguish your campfire. And then quickly I was on my way to the Senate Ladies' Red Cross luncheon for me, taking Jane Freeman with me. This had just been a stop along the way. This is a first for me, the first time to be the guest at such a luncheon. After 15 times of being one of the hostesses, 12 times as a Senate wife myself, 3 times as the wife of the Vice President. Mrs. Dominick of Colorado was the Republican chairman. She was assisted by Betty Talmadge as co-chairman. Mrs. Dirksen, since I'm no longer there, has inherited the spot as overall chairman of the Senate Ladies' Red Cross Unit. She was first vice president, but she's been gone a great deal, and Henrietta Hill, second vice president, has taken over. I wore my best clothes for them, my yellow wool dress by Galanos with the coat that matches, and it was a perfect color match to the decorations. Bowls of, you guessed it, yellow roses of Texas, and on top of one perched a pretty little bird, the property of Betty Talmage. Mrs. Dirksen put me in the receiving line, along with all the wives of the cabinet members except Mrs. Bobby Kennedy, who was out of town. Mrs. Henry Wallace was back. Always she's back. I don't believe she's ever missed one. Jane Barclay was there. I was very much flattered that Maureen Newberger and Margaret Chase Smith both came, and it wouldn't have been complete without the presence of Mrs. Harold Burton. There were delicious filet mignons, half from Texas, half from Oklahoma, all donated. When it was over, Luella presented me with a wonderful charm for a bracelet that, as I see, is going to grow larger and larger. The Senate seal on one side, again on the other, from Senate Ladies to Mrs. Johnson, April 14, 1964. It was easy to say words to those who were there, because I knew them all so well, and the words naturally were that if I ever wrote a book on my life, the longest chapter would be about our love affair with the Senate. Among the old-timers there were Mrs. Frances Parkinson Kies on two sticks, pretty irascible, saying that she had notified me of her presence in town and had not heard anything from my social secretary. Alas, Mrs. Toby is still the rock of the organization. A rather majestic woman she is, and terrifically nice. There was a good attendance and a lively spirit, but somehow there was something missing. I don't know what. That esprit de corps and sense of drive that prevailed when Lyndon was in the Senate, and always somehow by osmosis transferred itself to the Senate ladies and to me, was not quite there. When it was over, I came back, did that most signal service of a citizen, second most, I guess voting is first, that is, I signed my income tax papers, dictated and signed other mail, and then dressed up in my beautiful yellow chiffon evening dress with the beaded top that reminds me of the first forsythia of spring, and made ready to receive His Majesty King Hussein I. A little before 8, the Warrens, the George Balls, our Ambassador to Jordan and Mrs. Barnes, the Ambassador of Jordan and Mrs. Juma, the Dukes, their Minister of Foreign Affairs, and their Chief of Protocol, who incidentally I had stood close beside at the funeral of King Paul in Greece, and His Majesty King Hussein I and His Royal Highness Prince Hassan Ibn Talal came upstairs to the Yellow Oval Room for a drink, orange juice for them, scotch for us. There was the presentation of gifts. We had a Bulova Akatron clock in gold with a seal and engraved inscription for His Majesty, and a Vermeer pen stand with two gold pens, also with seal and inscription, and a Polaroid camera, and a book of Lyndon's speeches called A Time for Action. Somehow I'm always vaguely unhappy that our gifts seem less imaginative and less meaningful than the gifts of many foreign monarchs to us, and this was one of those times, for His Majesty gave me two bracelets from the time of the patriarch Abraham, a little oil-burning lamp that could have been used probably anywhere during 1,000 years of biblical time, and for us both an enormously handsome Bible bound in mother-of-pearl, elaborately carved. Rather delicious irony that the Bible should be the gift of a monarch who is himself a Muslim. But that little part of the world was the cradle of so many religions, civilizations, ways of thoughts. It was the veritable womb of civilization. Then the always thrilling removal of the colors, the forming in line, the marching downstairs to the tune of Hail to the Chief, and then standing in line in the East Room when the 152 or so guests filed by to shake hands. As usual, I, being third in line, had someone behind me to repeat the names of those who came, because that is my one little moment of contact with them. Perhaps I will not see them again during the dinner, and I want to really know who I'm talking to, and I want it to matter. From the court, there were the blacks. I'm delighted to have them. And from the cabinet, the Freemans and the Hodges. From the Senate, the McClellans, the Olin Johnstons. I'm so glad she's up and about. And all the Milton Young and the Clifford Cases, And also there were the Bartletts of Alaska. Governor and Mrs. Harrison of Virginia were there, and about six couples from the house, including the Clark Thompsons. And a state dinner was just invented for Libby. It's just what she'd like. A guest I was very honored to have was J. Edgar Hoover, who never goes to affairs of this sort, but who seems to have a very real respect and personal liking for Lyndon. It's not easy to find Jordanians high-placed in the United States, but we had Najib Halaby from the Federal Aviation Agency, Dr. and Mrs. Basile, a physician, and Mr. and Mrs. Ali Mahedin. And this was just the right time to have Helen Thomas, for the Thomas in her name, I think, must have been just chosen, and she is without doubt from somewhere in the Arab world. Texans, there were a goodly plenty. Troy Post of Dallas, Johnny Meekums, who will soon be the host to the King, the Bill Heath and the Ed Clarks, the Jim Chambers and the Perry Basses, and I don't think anybody had more fun than Perry and his pretty wife, and the Carl Finneys. It was a great compliment to me that Henry DuPont and Mrs. DuPont, the chairman of Mrs. Kennedy's Fine Arts Committee, came and seemed to enjoy themselves, and the next day had many good things to say about it. The Lord Hands were about the handsomest couple there, and Clark Clifford the handsomest bachelor, and Lady Jackson, Barbara Ward, certainly one of the most lustrous lights. I was pleased to have the Huntington Hartfords, having met him at a party a year or two ago, and found him a very attractive man of many interests and talents. And our preacher from the National City Christian Church, the Reverend Mrs. George Davis, had more fun than anyone, I think. It was a good time to have Mark Evans, on whose TV program I think I did the best I've ever done in my life, and Ruth Montgomery, whose book on me is coming to full play this week, and Dr. and Mrs. Grosvenor of the National Geographic Society always raise the tone of anything they're associated with, I think. The King was on my right, and his beautiful English, he learned it at Sandhurst, I presume he learned it earlier in life, but he did go to Sandhurst, made conversation easy. Although I can't say that at any time I made real contact with him. We spoke about his having piloted the 707 on the way over. I approached gingerly the subject of water, and he himself said that many of the springs of the Jordan River did rise within Israel. Renee's dinner was delicious, vol-au-vent of seafood Newburgh, filet of beef Nemours, and ending with strawberries Romanoff. And for the first time, I asked the gentleman on my right to sign the menu. It being in Arabic, I couldn't read it. But then he very graciously added Hussein 1, which I could read. We went into the East Room after dinner and heard the Dave Brubeck Quartet give four numbers of very avant-garde jazz, because we'd been told that the King was a jazz fan. Next day, Maxine Cheshire said, "Not one of the 151 guests was seen to yawn once, which may be somewhat historical in a review of presidential entertainment. In the past, programs which were praiseworthy for cultural edification have nevertheless put weary government officials quietly to sleep." I'm glad that she and apparently a lot of other people thought that way, because I was not actually in the groove with it myself. I like to hear St. Louis Woman with a Diamond Ring sung or played so that I feel like getting into motion, and I could barely recognize St. Louis Blues. However, I must be improving as an actress, because Maxine said, "But it was Mrs. Johnson who seemed to enjoy the music most. She tapped one gilt-shod foot and kept time with the rhythmic drumming of her fingers on her program." So, good enough. After the program was over, we went into the Blue Room for a little dancing. But since the King is only about 5 feet, 3 or 4, and also since he'd had a long, hard trip, he danced enough numbers to be polite and then took his departure. But a lot of people lingered for a gay evening. One of the bits of conversation I enjoyed most was when Jane Freeman said, "Oh, let's go dance." And the secretary said, "All right, you testify for me in front of the Appropriations Committee in the morning at 10 o'clock, and I'll go in there and dance with you." Another interesting bit of insight came from one of the guests, Dr. Alan McKelvey, who had spent several years in Jordan as part of a medical team. He said the king got a program underway to have every child in the country immunized against polio, and that he himself took the first shot. I like all the things I hear about him, his personal bravery, the fact that he gets out among his people. I'm sorry I never got around to seeing Johnny Meekum to hear just what the hopes were for finding oil in Jordan. Altogether, I'd say it was a successful, not superb, evening. But I wish I could look at it through the eyes of some of the guests and not through my own.